Amistad and Harper Audio present Of Blood and Sweat, Black Lives and the Making of White Power and Wealth by Clyde W. Ford, read by Julian Thomas. In memory of Vincent Gordon Harding, 1931 to 2014, Lerone Bennett Jr., 1928 to 2018. Introduction. Philip Corvin's case against Charles Lucas came before the Virginia Supreme Court on the afternoon of June 16, 1675, for final disposition, Lieutenant Governor Sir Henry Chicheley presiding. Opposing counsels may have argued the case a few days earlier, on June 12, to the full court of Governor Sir William Berkeley. Most cases landed at the Virginia General Council, the colonial-era Supreme Court, on appeal. Either the petitioner Corvin or the defendant Lucas presumably contested an adverse ruling by the lower Warwick County Court, which is how the case came up for final review by Judges Henry Chicheley, knighted by Charles I, Thomas Bacon, James Bridger, Philip Ludwell, James Bray, and William Cole. We know for certain that Philip Corvin was a black man, his case officially annotated as the petition of a Negro for redress, etc. In his initial filing, Corvin presented details of how he had been treated like property. Anne Beasley bequeathed him to her cousin, Humphrey Stafford, who then sold him to Charles Lucas. Philip Corvin, however, asserted he was not a slave. Beasley's will stipulated an 8-year indenture, after which Corvin was to have been given his freedom. But Lucas, his present master, had forced Corvin to work 3 years longer than the terms of that will. Then, after those 11 years of service, Lucas forced Corvin to sign an indenture for an additional 20 years under threats and a high hand, Corvin said. At that point, Philip Corvin had had enough. He took his case to the judicial system of colonial Virginia, demanding not only his freedom, but also the 3 barrels of corn and a suit of clothes promised him in Anne Beasley's will. That promise was widely known in colonial America as freedom dues. Chicheley handed down the Supreme Court's ruling, from which there would be no subsequent appeal. Petitioner's 20-year indenture vacated. Petitioner's request for freedom granted. Petitioner's request for court costs paid by defendant Lucas granted. Petitioner's request for freedom dues from defendant granted. Freedom dues is an idea as old as America, not expressed in the Declaration of Independence, nor enshrined in the Constitution, nor enumerated in the Bill of Rights. Freedom dues, nonetheless, arrived on America's shores with the first colonists. A belief that power and wealth, created from the labor of others, entitled those who helped create that power and wealth to their fair share. Stolen from Africa, hoodwinked, captured, or voluntarily signed on from Europe in the early 1600s, indentured servants worked in the fields of colonial planter masters without pay. But unlike slaves, bound in perpetuity, the labor of indentured servants had limits. They entered into contracts with their masters, offering their service for 4, 5, 7, 11, 14 years, and in some cases longer. At the end of their bondage, indentured servants expected not only their freedom, but also their freedom dues. Some combination of land, seed, tools, and clothes to help them begin anew. Freedom dues represented a promise, for a very few, a path up from poverty into the wealth, security, and prominence of the privileged planter class. For most, at least the bare essentials of subsistence living, enough to keep poverty at bay. This book focuses on the clash and convergence of two fundamental human conditions, freedom and bondage, and how that clash and convergence has played out in America. The clash between freedom and bondage is obvious. Not surprisingly, many masters, like Charles Lucas, refused to pay freedom dues, especially when it came to land grants. This failure to pay freedom dues was but one of many means by which landholding masters thwarted the aspirations.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?